There is no let up in the hammering that the people of Ukraine are taking from Russia as the largest wave of drone strikes for months swept across the country's cities overnight. Air raid alerts were heard across around two-thirds of the country, with the capital Kyiv bearing the brunt of the attacks. Tomorrow is Victory Day in Russia. The day marks the defeat of Nazi Germany, a defeat of unfathomable cost to Russia, a day which has been relentlessly hyped over the past few years by a government keen to emphasise Russia's heroic past in service of its present. Previously, Ukraine shared that day with Russia, but this year it marks Victory Day today, the same day as the West, and it will do so, its president says, again in future years. Hugo Bechega is the BBC's correspondent in Kyiv. Hugo, a heavy night of attack last night, capping a hard week of airborne assault.
Yeah, Johnny, the situation has changed quite dramatically in the last week or so. Today was the fourth attack on Kyiv in 8 days, and many of these attacks are happening as people are at home sleeping. This is what happened today. We heard the air raid alert at around midnight, and then we heard loud explosions here in the capital. And I think there is this uncertainty because you don't know what's happening. You don't know whether it's something that's been hit or whether it's the work of the air defense systems here. So the Ukrainian military said that Russia had launched 35 Iranian-made drones. These are the drones that Russia has been using to attack Ukrainian towns and cities, and that all of them were intercepted. But here in the capital, debris that fell from a drone that was intercepted hit a residential building. And I've just returned from this building. I spoke with the owner of a flat that was partially destroyed, and he said he was lucky, obviously, that he wasn't hurt. But he told me something that I've heard from so many Ukrainians who I've interviewed following these attacks, and that's the feeling that civilians have become the target, that the Russian strategy here is to terrorize people living in places like Kyiv, away from the front lines. And I think perhaps that's the fear here, that this is how Russia is planning to respond to this much anticipated counteroffensive by attacking cities and towns away from the front lines.
Well, you speak, Hugo, of an aim of terrorizing the population. You're in Kyiv. How does it seem when you talk to residents? I mean, nights and nights of assault like this on top of a war that's gone on for months and months now, it must be very difficult for them. How are they holding up?
It's difficult. I think it's a combination of people being extremely tired of these attacks. We had weeks of relative quiet, but in the last 2 weeks or so, we've seen that these attacks are happening, and they are happening at night. So it is perhaps a routine of having air raid alerts sounding at midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., people being told to go to shelters. And then, you know, this morning, the all clear came only 3.5 hours later. So people, you know, spend a lot of time, are spending a lot of time in shelters and you know, trying to seek protection. But at the same time, I think there is this determination to you know, resist. I think people think that the goal here is perhaps to hit the morale of the Ukrainians in this war. But I think this is having the opposite effect. I think people are determined to resist and to continue to support the country against this Russian invasion.
Hugo, thank you very much indeed. Hugo Bechega, our correspondent in Kyiv. As I mentioned, President Zelensky has confirmed changes to the official dates of events marking the end of the Second World War. The 8th of May, that's today, in case you've lost track, will officially be Victory Day in Ukraine. It was the 9th. Now the 9th will mark Europe Day to honour, he says, European unity and the defeat of what he calls Russism, a word blending Russian and fascism. President Zelensky said in a video released to mark the day that the old evil of Nazism had returned, this time waged by a modern Russia.
All all of the old evil that modern Russia is bringing back will be defeated, just as the Nazis were defeated. In opposition to our own ideals, this enemy has once again set its sights on aggression and annexation, on occupation and deportation, on mass murder and torture, bombing cities and burning villages. Our victory will be the answer to all of this.
That was President Zelensky, voiced up by a member of our production team. For weeks now, the West and presumably Russian forces have been expecting a Ukrainian counteroffensive, a spring offensive. But what emerges may not be as dramatic as was once expected. The Ukrainian Defense Minister, Alexei Reznikov, has sought to lower expectations, saying expectations from our counteroffensive campaign is overestimated in the world. General Sir Richard Barrons joins us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What do you make of what the Defence Minister has said? Expectations management or a statement of the militarily obvious?
No, I think he is managing expectations, but he's also recognising that this war isn't just about hope and expectation and rhetoric. It's about relative numbers and logistics and industry. And right now in Ukraine, there are about 300,000 Russian military on a 900-mile front line and another 200,000 Russians in direct support of the war. And over the last year, the Ukrainian side have built a counteroffensive force thought to be around 60,000 strong. And that will look for a 3 or 5 to 1 advantage where it chooses to attack. So realistically, to be sure of success, that Russian counteroffensive might occur over an area perhaps 15 miles wide, again, focused on about 10,000 Russian. These are very crude numbers. Mm-hmm. So even if it is brilliant and strategic and successful, as we hope, that's not going to make the Russians along the rest of the 900 miles pack up and go home.
So what, if anything, does?
So in the first instance, everyone is looking for this Ukrainian offensive to have some decisive effect. That probably means cutting through vital Russian logistics that connect Russia, say, to Crimea on the land bridge or something similar to that, or getting behind these now very well prepared and likely stoutly defended Russian positions to threaten their integrity from the rear. And that will create the sense that defeating this much bigger Russian opponent is possible, even if it isn't going to happen in 2023, and it's most unlikely to happen in 2023.
If the level of support that the West is giving Ukraine at the moment is not enough, what sort of scale or upscaling, forgive the word, would be required to enable Ukraine to actually reach victory?
So the first question is, when we have seen how this offensive plays out during the course of this spring, summer, the question is, will the Ukrainian people want to continue to fight? Because they are essentially going to commit to keeping this fight going realistically for another 2 to 3 years, whilst they build a force that's big enough, good enough, resilient enough to defeat the current scale of the Russian problem that they're presented with. And to put some numbers to that, before the war started, the West produced about 30,000 rounds of artillery ammunition a month, and that's an annual cost, very roughly, about £700 million. Ukraine needs 180,000 rounds a month, and so that's a bill closer to £4 billion a year before you buy air defence, armour, artillery, communications, drones, and all these other things. So for Ukraine to succeed in this war against the scale of the Russian opponent, it will only work if the West commits to industrial mobilisation at a price which will be significant, though, let's face it, much, much cheaper than fighting Russia ourselves.
May I ask you just briefly about Bakhmut? Last week we heard the head of the mercenary group that has been fighting there for so long saying he was pulling his troops out because they couldn't get the ammunition they needed from Moscow. We've now apparently had that position, reversed, and the Wagner group is staying in Bakhmut. Have you any idea what's going on?
Yes, I think the best analysis of that is a sign of how dysfunctional the Russian chain of command is, where the theatre commander, Gerasimov, really hasn't got full control over all the elements from Russia that are doing the fighting, like the Wagner group, because quite sensibly it seemed that the Russians had decided to deprioritize Bakhmut, which is essentially a grinding battle, to send their artillery ammunition to places where they think Ukraine is much more likely to attack. And in the face of that, the Wagner group said, well, we will pack our kit and go home if you don't give us ammunition. So to prevent that happening, they're now having to send ammunition to Bakhmut, and that means there will be less ammunition where the battle is most likely to take place. That isn't very clever.
General, thank you very much indeed for your time today. General Sir Richard Barrett.